Welcome to the Raging Rhino Podcast. This is podcast number 132, part one. My name is John. All the world is waiting for you and the power you possess. In science fiction circles, there are some classic debates on which headliner is better, Kirk or Picard from the Star Trek universe, Joel or Mike from Mystery Science Theater. And in comic books, the classic debate is Superman or Batman. Even when I was growing up, amongst my friends who were much more into Marvel, it was never Iron Man or Captain America, just Superman or Batman. Well, maybe I'm just an oddball, but I don't always go for the more popular one. Between Joel and Mike, it's Mike, unquestionably. Maybe that's why I like Riff Track so much. But sometimes I think there's an option even better than the classic debate. Between Kirk and Picard, I choose Sisko. I mean, don't get me wrong. Kirk is the original space cowboy, and Picard is the indomitable intellectual. Hell, I'll even make cases for Janeway or Archer, because each has their own strengths. However, Sisko is the most nuanced of the captains. And let's be honest, none of the others would have the guts to hit Q. Which brings me to Superman or Batman. Honestly, I choose neither. When you talk about the top echelon of DC heroes, it's not just those two. DC has the Trinity. Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman. And I would take Wonder Woman over the other two in a heartbeat. Now, don't misunderstand me here. Wonder Woman isn't my favorite DC character, or even my favorite female DC character. I could easily run off a couple of dozen DC characters I like more than any of the Trinity. Yes, Superman is the paradigm and the beacon of hope for the heroes. Batman, sure, he's cool, brilliant, and clearly has the best villains of any superhero. But when I was a teenager, Wonder Woman had something that neither Batman nor Superman had. Wonder Woman had George Perez writing and drawing her comic book. George Perez is easily my all-time favorite comic book artist, my all-time favorite single issue of any comic book. It's Justice League of America number 200. George Perez was the primary artist on that. He drew the legendary New Teen Titans series in the early 80s. Then he drew one of the most important comic book miniseries of all time, Crisis on Infinite Earths. I talked about that a year ago in this podcast. He was so successful, by 1986, DC would let him do anything he wanted. His choice? Write and draw the reboot of Wonder Woman. I recently reread the first couple of years on that run. It is amongst the most beautiful and spectacular artwork of his career. You could read one issue that was nonstop action and adventure, then read the next that was prose about the private life of a minor character, and both would be poignant and compelling. He made the Greek gods a more integral part of the character, took away that stupid invisible jet, and yes, it is stupid, made Steve Trevor a friend and ally, but never a lover, and began the acknowledgement of the obviously sapphic nature of the Amazon. Firmly placing her roots deep into mythology, mysticism, and magic gave her more distinctive stories. I was already a fan of George Perez the artist, but now I and everyone else learned how talented George Perez the storyteller was as well. I put up a Wonder Woman poster drawn by George Perez in my room. I'm pretty sure my dad worried about me. In the wrong hands, any character can be dull. In the right hands, any character can be fantastic. The George Perez run on Wonder Woman is arguably the best she's ever been portrayed in her history. Perez elevated her stature and set the bar for other writers. Prior to that, to be honest, Wonder Woman was, at best, an average character that was popular primarily because she was the first major female superhero. But the character suffered from some unimaginative writers, or writers stuck on societal stereotypes. Wonder Woman was a member of the original superhero team, the Justice Society of America, and one of its most powerful members. Her official job on the team? Secretary. If there was a female villain on a team of bad guys the Justice Society or the Justice League was fighting, Wonder Woman would always be the one to take her on. She only lost her powers if a man bound her bracelets, an Achilles heel intended to symbolize male subjugation of females throughout history. Unfortunately, that gave some writers an excuse to depict a lot of female bondage. That really wasn't what her creator intended for her. William Moulton Marston created Wonder Woman to be, quote, psychological propaganda for the new type of woman who I believe should rule the world, end quote. Marston, like a lot of people these days, felt that women are superior and should run society. Now, I don't agree with Marston's take, and I don't care for how most writers treated the character before Perez came along. As far as I'm concerned, if there is no difference between men and women, then there is no reason to believe either biological gender should somehow be better than the other to run society. Such arguments are proffered by petty, bitter, prejudiced people who want to propagate discord and hatred. If anything, Wonder Woman shows how, really, there is no difference. Take the first movie as an example. When Steve Trevor's plane crashes near the island, what do the Amazons do? They put on their armor and get ready to fight. They react first with violence and fear of the unknown, just like everyone else. Diana is obsessed with finding and killing Ares at all costs. Find enemy, kill enemy. Just like humanity is male and female in real life. But lately I've been thinking there's another problem with Wonder Woman that comic book writers seem to casually ignore because it just doesn't suit their agenda. I don't know if this might be addressed in the upcoming movie, but a line from Cheetah in the trailer could be an indication. Quote, you always had everything, while people like me have had nothing. End quote. The Amazons are a group of warrior women blessed with eternal youth and strength and agility far above the average human. They live on a hidden island protected by their deities. There don't seem to be any predators, nor any drought or famine to ever hit their little island paradise. They live under a monarchy where no one questions who is in charge, nor what their place in society is. There seems to be no one who wishes to do anything else with their lives other than what their position dictates. In the comics, the Amazons are often portrayed as the example of how things ought to be with the rest of the world. In comic book circles, creators and fans talk about how great the Amazons are and how much their fictional story can teach the world about living in harmony. Well, it's easy to live in harmony when you unquestioningly accept your lot in life on a perfect paradise where you never deal with the harshness of nature, never age to the point where your body can no longer function, and where you are supernaturally protected from strife. The Amazons in general, and Wonder Woman in particular, come from a life of astounding privilege, where nearly nothing bad ever happens. The Black Plague never devastated their society. No drought or flood ever affected their crops. No wolves killed their livestock. No monarch ever went mad with power. No vassal ever tried to overthrow the crown. It could really be said that they sold out after the last time they encountered tribulation in the real world. Gods that had turned their back on other followers gave the Amazons millennia of protection. They may have become interesting fictional characters under the right creators, but I hardly consider them inspiration for what our society should be. Is that going to keep me from liking the character? No. Is that going to keep me from liking the movie coming out on Christmas Day? No. What does worry me about the movie? Well, Steve Trevor coming back in what seems to be part of Maxwell Lord's mind control gives me pause. He seems to have a big role in this movie. Does that mean she's under some kind of mental illusion half the time? Why the golden armor from Kingdom Come? In the comics, it may have been visually striking, if impractical. But in live action, to be honest, it seems kind of hokey. Does she really swing on her lasso from lightning bolts? Yeah, at least that's a better explanation than how Spider-Man seems to swing from clouds. Even if those things are all less than satisfying, they aren't deal breakers. There are some things that will make me not like a superhero movie. The best way I can explain that is to give you examples. Make a farce out of a serious character. For me, there's no better example than the worst DC movie ever made, The Return of Swamp Thing. Of course, it didn't help that Louis Jourdan was just reciting his lines to get a paycheck, and most of the so-called actors wouldn't have made the cut in their high school plays. The only thing that I could think of that could have been worse is if there was a Green Lantern movie starring Jack Black. Put a really bad actor in the lead role. Shaquille O'Neal as Steel. I rest my case. Give powers to a powerless character. Catwoman was bad enough with a really shitty script. But she does not have cat powers. And that betrayed the character. I could say the same about the Jonah Hex movie. But the worst thing you can do is also a big concern for me with this movie. A few early reviews about this movie mentioned a timely message. Please, please tell me this is going to be a 2-hour superhero movie and not a 2-hour morality play promoting the left-wing agenda. Look, We all know these are leftists making a movie. And we all know they think they know better than us how we should live our lives. And we all know Orange Man bad. If Maxwell Lord turns out to be a ham-fisted analog for Trump, or the good guy starts spouting AOC talking points, we're going to have a bad time. The first Wonder Woman movie was able to make its empowerment point without hitting us over the head with it. So I hope the storytellers can keep that balance. On the plus side, that first movie was pretty darn good. You can always go back to listen to my podcast reviewing it. Gal Gadot is great in the role. And I'm really looking forward to Kristen Wiig as Cheetah. I think she's got some really good acting chops, although a lot of people only know her from comedies. As I've said before, I go into a movie looking for reasons to like it. I'll be back after Christmas with what I hope and expect to be a positive review. This is the Raging Rhino Podcast. You'll hear from me again.